I am. Hey guys, it's Lavetta.
And it's Miriam.
And this is the Notorious Women podcast, a comedy podcast about some of history's most notorious women.
Yes, yes.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. We have a special treat for you guys. We have none other than the Zachary Drucker. Zachary is an Emmy-nominated producer, multimedia artist, a trans woman who breaks down the way we think about gender, sexuality, and seeing. With credits on the Emmy-nominated This Is Me and the Golden Globe and Emmy-winning Transparent, she has performed and exhibited her work internationally in museums, galleries, and film festivals, including the Whitney Biennale in 2014, MoMA PS1, Hammer Museum, Art Gallery of Ontario, MCA San Diego, and SF MoMA, among many, many others. Please, please, please give a wonderful Notorious Women welcome to Zachary Drucker. Boop, boop, boop.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for having me. What a gift to be here with you.
Thank you for being with us. We know that you are a very busy woman. But we also, as we get into it, we want to actually talk about, because I know you have some Notorious Women that you want to talk with us about and share with our listeners, including April Ashley and Amanda Lear.
Oh, you're going to. Yeah, absolutely. Two of my favorite ladies.
Tell us a little bit more about her. I did a little, like a tiny, tiny bit of Googling, and I was like, ooh, I can't wait to hear about these ladies.
Oh my goodness. Well, I love that you're asking me straight out of the gate.
Yes.
About these two women. I actually have just completed my next HBO feature documentary about the two of them, and it has not been announced yet. This is the first time I'm even talking about it. So you have an exclusive.
Oh, yes.
and a first. April Ashley is a human rights icon in the UK. She was among the first women to have a, you know, gender reassignment surgery in 1960 under Dr. Really? Georges Bureau in Casablanca, Morocco, which is where he was a French expat, but many of the first women to get sex changes went to Casablanca. And April had been a very successful female impersonator at the Carousel in Paris, which is a female impersonation review. It opened in 1948. It was the hottest ticket in Paris. Yeah. Any American movie star, whoever, you know, spent time in Paris, like Elvis Presley and, you know, you name it, Liz Taylor, Paul Newman, Joanne Woodward, like every Hollywood star and starlet, from 1948 through the 70s would
go to. And she was a star there. Wow. They came to see her. Wow.
Yeah.
Completing her surgical transition, moved back to London and was amidst a successful modeling career when a jealous model that she was working with sold her story for £5 to the British tabloids.
What? And she was kidding me.
Unceremoniously outed. Yeah.
For £5? That's it?
I know. Gabif,
you want to do that? You got to get enough money to flee the country. Okay.
Yes. So April Ashley is a notorious woman because she stabbed this bitch, right? That's what you're going to tell us.
I would say for me, she's notorious because they were so rude and how they, kind of interrogated her, of course, as a fraudster, as an impersonator. You know what I mean?
That's the trope.
Thing that's always dogged trans people forever. Yeah. But she's notorious in my eyes because she said, this is who I am, and I'm not ashamed, and there's nothing you can say that will shame me from...
Amen. Amen. So she said, amen, sister. That's right.
Yeah. That's right.
She said, I was born George Jameson, and there was nothing unusual about my upbringing or my family of origin. And she just owned it, which is kind of incredible. So Amanda Lear was her protege.
Okay.
She was a few years younger and also followed in April's footsteps, eventually having a gender reassignment surgery herself and resurfacing in London in the 60s, and was also an incredibly successful model. She famously was connected to Brian Jones of the Rolling Stones. It was rumored that one of their early hits, Mrs. Amanda Jones, is about her.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
Although not confirmed. We can't confirm that it's about her. But she was shaped by Salvador Dali, who was famously infatuated with drag queens and transsexuals.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so many. In his coterie of, friends. And Amanda, she also was in a relationship with David Bowie for many years, who encouraged her to train her own voice. And when she branched out to her own music career, eventually becoming the disco queen of Europe, she was also asked about her history. And instead of capitulating to, people's curiosity, she said, "No, I'm not." And she denied it. So she took this divergent path and kind of learned from April's, the consequences that April paid in her life. And for 50 years, she's persisted in obfuscating her history. And so this film is called April and Amanda. It's a two-hander, and it examines the costs and gains of these two women and how divergent their journeys really become once they make the decision to either, accept and own their history versus deny and obscure their history. And it's just a fascinating story that I think encapsulates all of the themes of trans life in public view.
Public view, yeah. Because I was going to ask you, do you think that both Ashley and Amanda were obviously it sounds like Amanda was never hiding anything. She was like, "This is me, bitches, like take it or leave it."
Yeah.
Yeah. In there, Amanda's the one, April and Amanda. I love that.
Yes.
April, do you think in their personal lives, were they like with family and friends, they were just who they were, but publicly, because I think there's that, like all of us, like, we can see with online culture, right? People online are very often different than people in real life. Right?
Absolutely.
And celebrities have been doing that from the beginning. All of Hollywood is based on the PR machine, right?
Yeah.
The public persona versus the real person. But I think it's interesting that Amanda's not wrong. Right? Because she saw firsthand the consequences of being loud, out and proud. And so should we penalize her or judge her for making those decisions?
Absolutely not.
I just think in those times, in that era, it's hard enough now when there is a trans movement.
Yeah.
That there was no trans. I've done a lot of this research, and I actually just recently watched The Stroll on HBO. Let me just shout that out, Zachary. It's the most
thanks for watching.
Beautiful.
Yes.
I think everyone needs to see it.
Yeah.
We got nominated for an Emmy for that.
Good.
Oh, congratulations. Good. Look at you. Look
and
at
we won
so
a Peabody.
Lucky. Oh, I'm my so God. Proud of congratulations.
Yeah.
And a GLAAD Award.
Yes. Yes. Can't
and
forget the GLAAD Award.
Award.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Everybody. Go watch it right now.
Yes, go and watch the Troll.
It's a tight 82 minutes, so it's not tight. A huge commitment.
It's from start to finish really, really interesting. And I thought it was really interesting too, because I moved to New York in the year 2000. And so I remember some of this.
Oh, like, wow.
But from the point of view I had then, I think we need to look at that history in the 60s and the 70s and in before that too, of like what people were saying and reassess what people were thinking. Does that make sense? So I thought I think that's why these documentaries you make are so important.
Hindsight is 2020.
Yeah, it's always, and people want to judge people even from like, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. And it's like, we're always evolving as human beings, hopefully. And like, but it's so interesting, like with Amanda, she was dating David Bowie, who was a famous, like famously gender bender, quote unquote, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes when you look at the 60s, you're like, oh, they seem more, I don't know, welcoming, accepting, more tolerant, quote unquote. But then it's like, no, they weren't, because it's still the 60s.
Yeah.
Right. And when a lot of the movements really had to break through.
I always say the future is better and worse simultaneously, because progress moves alongside opposition. And it moves in both directions.
So true.
So today you have trans people at the center of a national culture war that's been going on for decades. It's, you know, the kind of same fight against feminism and then against gay and lesbian equality. It's just morphed and transformed over time. And while, you know, years ago, there wasn't awareness that, you know, of trans people all the while, we've always been here.
Absolutely.
But it's better and worse. It's kind of, it's better because we have coalitions. We have a sense of solidarity between movements. We have allies. That didn't happen before. Like, you didn't have non-trans people advocating for trans folks. It used to be just us advocating for ourselves. And the arrival of allies has been incredible to witness, and not something I thought I would encounter in my lifetime. So we've made leaps, and we've also, kind of paid the consequences for those.
The backlash is always, that's what we're in the midst of now, right? Like the right doesn't have they don't have any policies, but they have cultural war agendas, right?
Yeah.
And so trans folks are the ones who are the seemingly the most vulnerable are.
But low because
like to your
and
point, like
have
because
been. Always
and
have
always have been. But I think that they think, oh, they're the big kid on the playground. It's like, oh, let's go and mess with this kid. And then it's nice to see people showing up and be like, oh, no. Because if you mess with that kid, you're going to have to come through us somewhat, you know. But I think that, but they are making inroads, because there's still a lot of prejudice. There's still a lot of bigotry and resistance. You know, I in particular come from, have a difficult background with abuse. And so it really irks me when they're trying to equate, you know, the queer community with child abuse. And I'm like, most of these motherfuckers are cis men out here raping children. So let's get it straight. Okay. You know, but to that point, I wanted to ask you, how do you think, especially since Transparent, that was like revolutionary television, and because it's the thing that really put Amazon on the spot in a lot of ways, and it went global. Yeah. So how do you think representation of trans folks has improved, or what's the arc in the last like 10, 15 years, as we see more like media, TV and film content, you know, at least centering trans folks and their voices?
Well, it's a loop-de-loop arc, I guess, or it's a roundabout. It's not a clear line. It seems like we were seeing more representation, more complex representations. I love the idea of notorious women, because I personally have been so drawn to the anti-heroes of trans history.
Yeah.
The, you know, because our survival has been ingenious in terms of clawing out space for oneself in a world that doesn't see you coming, that doesn't have a place for you, and against all odds, persevering. So that's a through line in the stories that I've been telling. And yet I think there's an incredible desire in the community to tell more affirming stories about trans folks. It's just that those stories are less interesting to me personally. but I see the need for the kind of correction of a cinema and television history that's maligned and denigrated or made trans folks the punchline.
You know, I was telling Miriam, I was like, it reminds me of, because we were actually talking about this a couple of days ago. It's like, it reminds me of like in the 80s, there's this phenomenon of like black male detective sergeants. Like, if you see it, it's like in like, like the black men have to be like, you know, the upstanding, he's the most wonderful, he's a unicorn, and he's in charge. It's like an overcorrection. And, you know, I used to joke, we both performers, I used to joke also, starting off as an actress, black women were either crack whores or judges. And there's like no in between. And it's like, people are all those things. They're both and they're all that stuff in between. And that's when the real humanity comes, right? Like, I'm like you. I like an anti-hero. I like a female anti-hero. Like, I like girls who do bad things.
She loves a murderess. Lovetta.
Because listen, unless they're killing children, which unfortunately often happens.
Absolutely,
I like
not.
A black widow. I mean, listen. Sometimes these men gotta die. Sometimes they need to be poisoned. Sometimes they need to be pushed out a well. Listen, sometimes.
It's entertainment. It's storytelling.
It's storytelling.
And the parallels between black representation and trans representation are, I think that we're in a similar Sidney Poitier kind
exactly.
of phase of storytelling. So all of the points you make, Lovetta, are really cogent when it comes to the trans tropes and then the undoing of those tropes. And then as a creator, it can feel really creatively stifling because, but at this point, I don't feel like I owe anybody anything.
Yeah,
I
good
feel
for you.
Like
yeah.
the thing that's more, that I'm more led by my own curiosity and telling the stories that are truly captivating.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, and it's not one size fits all.
I mean, go on.
No, you.
Okay. That was where Lovetta and I were coming when we came up with Notorious Women. Our point was that it's not that women are so great. Mm-hmm. It's not that we're better than men. It's that we're as complex and a part of all of humanity as men are, and we need to change the narrative. And I think that's where you're coming from too, to a degree. If it's the trans people are all the peoples, we do all of the things, and that's what brings the humanity to it.
And that's what makes a complex character.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's compelling to watch. Like that's what makes characters feel human. People you know, feel like people in your family.
Yeah.
That's what makes characters relatable always, you know, like, and that is one of my biggest lessons from Transparent is, the idea of having likable characters is not interesting. You know, characters have to be fallible and flawed, and that's the way in. That's how we can reach people's vulnerability. And I think that's the case in real life, too. You know, I just personally have been so oriented towards perfection in my own life. And it haunts me sometimes because there are no perfect people and therefore no perfect role models. And, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a word. That's facts, as the kids say, right? Facts. like that is so interesting. I too suffer. I'm a recovering perfectionist, and it's
very stressful. Interesting.
Why are you trying to embarrass me in front of Zachary?
So much.
but it's so true. Like it's, you know, it's like, I do want to see a trans character who's like, you know, she's a mom and she's like, sometimes I hate my fucking children.
Right.
It's like, sometimes I love them, but sometimes I want to like push the little shit down because he's doing something to me.
But
like,
sometimes I drink vodka at 10 a.m. Okay.
So
Exactly.
But you, so tell us about your, where are you from originally?
I grew up in Syracuse, New York, which I like to call the most glamorous place in America.
It's really pretty there.
Well, I mean, Vanessa Williams is from Syracuse.
I love that about Syracuse, personally. And I met her backstage once and completely fanned out because I was like, I don't know if she actually, I don't think she's from Syracuse, but I think she went to Syracuse University. Or she has the Syracuse connection, and I've always known about that because there are not many people who make it out alive.
or who make
it out into the world and have a tremendous impact. So she played really big in my childhood imagination, just knowing that she walked the same streets that I did.
What was it like growing up in Syracuse? Other than being cold as fuck.
Yeah.
And I grew up buried in snow.
Yes, you did.
Walking to a bus stop in like chest deep snow is what I like to say. Like I just, my father worked at Carrier Air Conditioning Company, which was, provided a lot of jobs in the area. And then like any Rust Belt town after NAFTA was signed, you know, all those jobs were shipped elsewhere, and it kind of had a slow decline. But it's on the up and up. Currently, they're starting to manufacture micro trips in Syracuse, and everybody's very hopeful about, the future economy there. I love it. I mean, I still have a lot of family and friends there. And there has to be a reason that my life started there. Where are you guys from?
I'm from Florida. Don't hold it against me.
I won't. Florida's also very complex. They're
special. I like to say, I know that's the best word. When Tiger King came out, I was like, oh, I'm very familiar with that, with these kind of people. They're all over Florida.
Miriam?
I'm from California. I'm from Anaheim. I'll say it. I'm from Anaheim before Anaheim was like a nice place to live. I have friends that they hear this. They're gonna be mad that I said it, but you know it's true. Now it's like nice. I'm like, what is happening?
I get in trouble for talking about Syracuse. It's happened before.
I don't care. Fuck Florida. It's so funny because people are like, oh, no, Miami's great. I'm like, no. Miami is not like the rest of Florida. It's Florida.
It's not.
Florida's this weird kind of, and there are a few famous people from Florida, and I'm from the Orlando area, so Disney World. Yeah. And so, but like, I heard someone describe it. They're like, it's like a weird mix of like rednecks, Southern culture, and then like it has this international flavor, like, you know, like Fresh on the Boat that was set in Orlando. Fresh off the Boat. And like, it's like, it's such a weird hodgepodge. And like, but Miami is its own sort of like cosmopolitan. And like, and Orlando, but I went back recently because my grandparents were, my grandmother was sick, and I went back recently and I was like, oh my God, it's worse than it was when I was a kid. How is that possible? Yeah. And it's fucking Ron DeSantis. I'll say it.
Yeah.
He's just like, you can't, whenever you try and target one part of the population for failure, it doesn't work. It affects the whole thing. This is, you know what I mean? Like, to your point earlier about Syracuse, if jobs go away from these major cities, it's going to affect the whole state.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's just a lot. I forget because I've been away. Like I lived in New York and, you know, and I lived, and I've lived out here and I forget. And I go back and I was like, oh yeah, this is
it's always a mistake to separate yourself from other people or to think of yourself in opposition to the other, because the reality is that we're all interconnected. And it's, you know, we don't go through life in isolation. It's, you know, we enable each other's lives and livelihoods, and we're all a part of this together.
Yeah. Didn't Elie Wiesel write a nice little poem about that long time ago?
I think he did.
Yeah. I guess we didn't learn much. Well, that's why we're here. We're educating the people. Okay.
Yeah. And speaking of Elie Wiesel and Notorious Women, one of my favorite, books of recent years is by Eddie Hilsum, who also, you know, she died in Auschwitz. She wrote a diary and letters. She lived in Amsterdam during, you know, the Nazi occupation in the 40s. And this book, it's called A Life, or An Interrupted Life.
I need to read it.
Incredible. It's haunting. It's so profound and so prescient these, you know, in the kind of resurgence of fascist and totalitarian thinking and, you know, real dictators and would-be dictators. I always find wisdom in these places, these books. You know, I also think about Hannah Arendt's Origin of Totalitarianism.
Oh, is yes. I haven't read it, but I've heard of that.
I mean, you know, I will say, to be fair, I'd be a dictator.
You would?
Because some motherfuckers need to be gotten rid of. Survival of the fittest. So all the dumb people, and I don't mean uneducated, because they can be taught. You know, they can be taught how to read and critical thinking that elevates society. Again, I'm a sci-fi girl, so I want to get to Star Trek. You know, in the next 100 years.
I think it will be sooner.
Like I don't know. Zachary, because now I realize I remember reading about the Spanish flu and you're like, oh, 50 million people died. How? Oh, it's because they didn't understand medicine. Then having gone through this, no, motherfuckers are just stupid. They're like, I don't want to wear a mask. My manhood. Just kill all these stupid motherfuckers. So yeah, if I was a dictator, kill all the dumb motherfuckers, all the people who want to get along, who want to live, coexist with one another and be happy. Those people can stay. The other motherfuckers got to go. And I know it's a slippery slope. I get it.
Lavetta, I have a quick question about the society that I'm going to live under you. We have free health insurance. That's the only then I'm down. Yes. It's fine. Tell me what to do. Okay.
Like,
universal.
You know what we're going to have, Miriam?
What?
And they actually have it in Korea. When you give birth or go through a major surgery, they send you to like a hotel where your baby or where you can recover.
What?
And they bring you 3 meals a day plus 2 snacks a day.
Oh my God, I need snacks.
And if you're a new mom and you have to nurse, they bring the baby to you.
Oh my God.
And then take the baby away so you can rest and recover.
Stop
it. So this is what we're going
to
have for people.
We're going to add more kids.
We're going to add monthly massages to health plans.
Yeah. And many fewer morons.
Yes, I'm telling you.
Many fewer morons.
I think dictatorship could be okay under me. So, no. I'm just, because it never works that way, right? It's always the dumbest motherfucker that is in charge.
Oh, yeah.
And the most cruel, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it really is the failure of our education system to, equip people with complex thinking tools. And so these simple answers, people are really looking for these simple answers that lead to extremist ways of thinking, that lead to kind of ethnic nationalism. And it's in these, simple answers for complex quandaries that people end up falling into conspiracy theories and,
The fact that we're fighting people who say that the earth is flat. Now, this is what I mean, Zachary.
So tired. Yeah.
Flat earthers, they gotta go. They gotta go. I mean... if you say, and I'm only speaking to the brothers, if you say female, you got to go. Don't say female. That's always a red flag. You got to go.
What is it you don't like about the word female? Is it dehumanizing, you think?
It's the way that, because usually it comes from, because they don't say male, they say man, and these females out here. I think it has source in the origins in the 90s with the very misogynistic gangster rap. It's just whenever a guy's like, yo, these females, and you're just like, oh God.
But Lovetta, that's your cue to walk away. Without that, you might not have a cue.
No, but see, here's the problem.
What's the problem?
If it were just people on the street, it'd be fine. But these are people who have this mindset that are your bosses, your colleagues, people you're trying to sell a TV show to. it's just like,
okay.
When I was a kid, I played in Alice in Wonderland and I played the queen, the one that's always like off with their heads.
Yeah, that was
and I
you.
Think
yeah,
that imprinted
seems right.
on me. I think that yeah. imprinted on me at like, 7 years old, and I think I've never forgotten that, Zachary. So you're in Syracuse, being fabulous, trying to survive. And what happens? You graduate high school, or do you go off to college? That typical thing, or do you like, I'm out of here? Like how I was with Florida. I'm like, I can't wait to get out of this place.
Just like that.
Yeah.
The day after I graduated high school, I borrowed my grandmother's car. I packed it up and drove to New York City. It was the summer of 2001. So I was close behind you, Miriam, if you moved there in 2000.
Almost, yep.
And, that was, I feel like in some ways 9/11 was kind of my entrance into adulthood.
Yeah,
I went to, art school, the School of Visual Arts. I got my BFA there before moving to LA to go to CalArts for my master's. Then in between all those coordinates, I met a lot of notorious women who've shaped me. And I think of... my fairy godmothers in heaven, Flawless Sabrina, who is a legendary drag queen in New York and a fixture in New York nightlife for years. She ran drag contests in the 1950s. And of all the people, she's the MC of... The Queen, which is a 1968 film, kind of pulling the curtain back on one of her drag shows at Town Hall with Andy Warhol as a guest judge and Edie Sedgwick. And that's a little relic.
What?
And Flawless was the Wicked Witch of the East, and then met the Wicked Witch of the West, which is her friend in Hollywood Lawn. It was one of the kind of Warhol transsexual superstars.
Did you ever do drag when you were living in New York?
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit.
You know, I worked in nightlife, so it was always draggy, and I was like a dork girl. Yeah. But it's interesting. I never had a drag name. I always just stuck with Zachary, and I still to this day see people around town who will recognize me as the door girl.
Really?
It's like, it's 15, you know, 18 years later, and people still clock me as the door girl from the club.
Girl, that's because you still got it, okay?
What were you doing as the door girl?
Just directing traffic.
Being cute, you know.
So New York is really... I think New York is a great place to live when you're like, especially like around that age. And it's like, it's so exciting. And I similarly moved there after college. And I just remember being like, so like enamored and like literally being like in the streets, like, oh my God, this is fabulous. And I remember being very, very surprised and kind of stoked that the, you know, that Italian New York thing was real. Cause you're walking down the street, these guys are like, yo, I'm walking here. And I'm like, oh my God, they really do sound are like you that from the movies.
Are you really walking here?
It's like, it's so exciting. It could be tiring on your your body and your psyche after a while. Like
I left before I got jaded. I was 22 and I thought, I'm too young to be jaded. I gotta get out of here.
Zachary, I was so much older than you when I left New York. I was like, I've been jaded for 3 years, I'm going, bye.
I remember just losing my shit on an MTA worker because the card machine like stole my money. Or it took my money or whatever. And I was like, this fucking thing. And I remember going up to the, and I was like, this thing's got to work, this fucking thing. And this poor guy, who's an older Caribbean gentleman, he was like, oh, darling, no, what's a beautiful girl like you with this mouth? And I was like, I felt so ashamed. I was like, oh my God, he's really right. Aww. He's like, and I'm like, this fucking thing. And I'm like, I got to get out of here. Like before me and the rat start having cage matches too. So,
The rats. Oh my God. Having a whole relationship to rats every day.
Yeah, it's, and I guess it makes sense. It's an, you know, it's an old city, you know, and there's always construction that
I remember my friend's sister came to visit and it was her last day. And she was like, I'm so glad I got through this trip without seeing one rat. And we're on the subway. And I went, just don't look down. She's like, what do you mean? And I was like, just don't look down and you will succeed.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I love California. And it's so funny because now there's a lot of New Yorkers out here, but like, they want to diss California. I mean, you trade off for earthquakes or rats, you know, earthquakes or rats, earthquake tremors or rats. So your time out here in grad school, what was that like? How was that like creatively? How did that kind of like open you up or like influence you and your work?
It's a great question. I mean, we're so influenced by our environments and where we choose to be. And so I felt this pull towards, you know, more mainstream media and content creation. And I felt like I was really in the right place at the right time as Joey Soloway started to develop Transparent and having been in an adjacent form of storytelling as an artist, making experimental film and video works. I feel so fortunate for the training that I got working on a hit TV show. And it would not have happened if I'd chosen to live in London or in New York or, you know, Chicago. Definitely a city girl. I always have been. I was always kind of drawn to the excitement and the lights and the you know, big community, the big diverse communities that I've been lucky enough to encounter. And I've lived now in Los Angeles longer than Syracuse, New York.
When that occurs to you, you're like, oh yeah, life is long and short at the same time. You know, let's stick with transparent for a bit. I'm very curious if you can help me and Miriam, actually, and our audience understand, what is it like to be inside of something that was just such an explosive cultural phenomenon and such a hit and so acclaimed? And like, what was it like inside with you guys, like inside the bubble?
Head spinning. Yeah. Oh, I mean, where to even start?
Because you're working in a room, right? For those of you who don't know, you're working in a room long before it comes out. So you're working, and then it's broadcast or it's streamed, and then it starts to hit, and then audiences and critics start to respond. So what was it like when that started? Because you guys were obviously already in the groove on the train, as they say.
Absolutely.
But just for it to be received in the way it was received.
In the Carol Lombard building on the Paramount lot in Hollywood. It was the first season we were creating without any real awareness of the show. And that has a certain kind of alchemy for sure when you're, when you don't quite yet know what's to come.
Right.
And, you know, by the time we were filming the second season, the first season was a hit. And we were being nominated for Golden Globe Awards. And then the Emmys happened. I remember the first Emmys that we were nominated for happened as we were wrapping the second season. And then everybody's careers blew up. Person connected to the show in their own microcosm became more in demand. And that led to, a whole slew of reverberations and consequences and huge careers and then epic downfalls. And it's very much like an opera in so many ways. I mean, and on any TV show, you have, it's an entire village of people. I mean, it can be on a day when you have a lot of background actors, it can be hundreds of people on set that you're overseeing and a lot of moving parts, but it's so dynamic and it's so exciting. And I've been incredibly grateful to make documentaries and to be in the nitty-gritty of the, you know, kind of historical details. And it's
grounded.
Exciting. But I do miss the scale of a big TV show, of collaborating with that many people. And it's, I hope, you know, I know that I have another TV show in my canon in the future. I mean, at least one or two. But I'm always just, I always come to the stories that I'm telling with a tremendous amount of gratitude.
Yeah.
And I just learned so much from Transparent. I mean, it's 6 years of my life.
Yeah.
So it's a big, long chapter. You know, it's not a little one.
No, 6 years is that's undergrad and graduate school.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, so.
It's my whole 30s, I think.
Yeah. So what's next for you? What's your next, what are you excited about moving forward? The project with Ashley and Amanda, you know, I know you've mentioned that a little bit, but like
April and Amanda. We're hoping.
Have you seen Ashley?
I'm so sorry, Zachary.
You're just giving me a preview.
No. I'm giving you. I've been hanging out with old people, and you know how they mispronounce everything. Like,
you know what?
I'm so sorry.
No. To be fair, I genuinely
was like, are you doing another one with someone named Ashley as well? Wow.
She has two first names. Listen, it's amazing. April Ashley.
It's April.
That's two first names. Yeah.
And Ashley. April?
It's April and Amanda.
It's April and Amanda. There's no Ashley.
You know what? Okay, I'm going to log off right now.
No, thank you, Lavetta.
We love you so much.
You're just letting me know.
And yeah. Amanda.
This is going to keep happening. And this is going to be the whole story of the press.
It's April, Ashley, Amanda.
Yeah. Still no Ashley.
And Amanda.
April and Amanda.
You know, I have a friend that in my 20s, I used to be like, you know, Matt Dillon. She's like, I know you mean Matt Damon, but I'm going to ignore you.
Jennifer Anderson.
I get it from my grandmother, RIP. I went to school in Ithaca. But there's a Utica, New York, right?
You know Syracuse. Syracuse is right next door.
Oh, I'm very familiar with Syracuse and Buffalo.
We used to skip school and go to Ithaca because it was much prettier.
Yeah, it's really very beautiful. But my grandmother called it Ithaca. Because it's Ithaca and Utica. I'm like, Grandma, it's Ithaca and Utica.
I'm going to use that.
Like, so forgive me.
That's hilarious.
April and Amanda.
Yes.
Yes.
And just to, you know, kind of bring it home and to complete the tapestry of our conversation. I mean, what's next and where we're at in trans representation is that, like, since trans people have been so heavily targeted and obsessed over by the right, and because we're such a small population and it's not relevant, you know, it's not that we're not relevant to everyday Americans all over the country, but it's like it's not central to the Democratic platform. I think that it's a strange moment because right now their response is to really not take the bait, to not play defense and then obsess over, you know, trans people as well. It's been to kind of like sidestep and ignore the issue or like erase it. And that's happened in Hollywood as well. It's definitely it's not a time when people are like super eager to tell trans stories. But I think that regardless of what's to come, it will lead to, you know, greater interest and ultimately the integration of our stories and into the pop culture ecosystem.
It's interesting you say that. I'm wondering if politically, if they think it's I remember years ago, Toni Morrison was saying that one of the greatest problems with racism is that it steals you of your time and because you're always defending yourself and being like, no, I am worthy. Right. Mm-hmm. And I wonder politically if it's one of those things that it is it's an effective targeting trans folks in particular, not just LGBTQ plus IA, but trans folks in particular.
Yeah.
Specifically, it's a heinous attack, but it's also effective because I think still many people who will say that they are good people still have their harbor their own prejudices, right? And their own fears because they don't know enough trans folks, or they're just idiots, like the kind that we need to get rid of. But
Lavetta knows she has a list. Okay.
My list is longer than Donald Trump's, and it's mostly his supporters. But but I wonder if, because I hadn't even thought about that. You're right. It's like it's creating, it's not taking it on, taking the bait, like you said, because I wonder if they think it's too like a hot potato and it's not something that you can get a handle on, because also it's absurd. Like this whole attack on trans folks, it's not based in anything other than stupidity and bigotry, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. But you're to your point in Hollywood, because people think Hollywood is so liberal,
right?
It's not. And you're right. I have definitely seen, they say they love to do a lot of lip service. Oh, yeah. We want trans stories with, you know, from trans folks, that, you know, telling their own stories. But it's like when it comes to like when the rubber meets the road, yeah. are you writing a check?
Like, right.
Put your money where your mouth is. Like, yeah. you know, and that is a frustration. And that is something that we definitely have to keep the fight going for, because to your point, I want to see all kinds of trans stories, like not just, you know, the unicorn trans person who has no faults and no flaws. We want to see trans folks living their lives realistically out in the world and in these stories.
I have to say it's interesting. So there's actually children's books that involve trans people now, which is incredible. Thank God.
Yeah.
There's one that I was reading because I read all the things to my kids since they were little. And I noticed it and went, it's a great book. It's so necessary. Thank God for this book.
What's the name of it?
It's called Camp Quilt Bag. And it's fantastic. Really, really good. So necessary. But every single child in this book is a wonderful child. They, because they're, as to it, you said, like, some kids are brats. Some kids are selfish.
Children have to be.
Some kids are whatever. Yeah. But because it's so important to represent these children, and maybe that's necessary.
Oh, yeah, you know yeah, yeah. I mean? No, that stuff is necessary.
I find it interesting that you cannot have, in this story, you cannot have the bully. You cannot have the, so, you know, there's no, like, story exactly.
Mm-hmm. What age is it for?
I would say, and I'm talking about it because I want y'all to read it. And I think we need more, we need more people getting those books out of the library. We need more people buying those books. So I'm going to just shout out two of them. It's Camp Quilt Bag. Don't ask me the name of the author because I never remember anything. And then there's another fantastic book. Okay, the first version of that is called George, but then the second version is called Melissa because George is actually Melissa. So as we said before, we get better and we get worse. That's like we now have children's books and children representation, which is so necessary.
And but, Florida be banned, though, I'm sure.
I know that's why Florida. We need to send pounds and pounds of these books to Florida and Texas.
To Ron DeSantis' house. I see this is I'd be a good dictator. I'm just saying. But. But I think it's so important that we also just keep vigilant and keep moving the needle forward, because I think that they want us to get tired. They want us to get apathetic. Mm-hmm. They want us to give up. They want us to give up and go away. You know, these people, these hateful people want queer kids to be ashamed and kill themselves. They really do. This is what I'm saying. Like, some motherfuckers need to be gotten rid of, because they're out here, they're in charge, and they're putting out this message, and young people are very impressionable. You know, we're just all human beings trying to do the best we can in the world, trying to survive, trying to create, you know, and so your next project is
April and Amanda.
No, I was going to make Lovetta say
on HBO.
On HBO.
Zachary's like, I would like people to find it. So
when is it coming out?
Sometime in 2025.
April and Amanda. See,
you did it.
So proud.
My grandmother would be proud that I mispronounced stuff. Itika. But no, we definitely want people to go and find April and Amanda on HBO when it comes out next year in 2025. Support Zachary and all you do. Thank you so much for spending time with us.
Oh, are you kidding? The pleasure is all mine.
You know, you're truly. Just so like, you're the smart, sophisticated friend that me and Miriam need. Like, you know, we go in there being loud and like hams, and you're like
really obnoxious,
and like sophisticated, and be like, you know.
Oh, don't sell yourself short.
I don't know, darling.
We're working on it, Zachary. We're working on it.
Yes. And now, where can people find you? Like your Twitter handles, TikTokity.
I don't use. I am on Instagram. I don't use it very often anymore. But find me there. Let's say that. If you spell my name right, you'll find me. C-A-C-K-A-R-Y, Drucker.
Is this the time I should admit that when I looked for you at first, I spelled your name wrong? Or should I admit that later?
That's okay. No, everybody does. Common error.
Listen, no one spells my name right. It's fine. I feel you.
I mean, you are, no, truly, this was really, really wonderful. Thank you so much. And you guys, you check her out and all the stuff that she's doing and checking, and check out April and Amanda on HBO next year when it comes out. Support her, as well as The Stroll.
Yes.
Check that out, you know.
It's so good.
And Transparent and all of her work. You can find her on, obviously, IMDb, Wikipedia, Google her, bitch. That's what we're saying. So,
lots to read.
On that note, we're going to wrap it up for another episode of Notorious Women. Thank you guys for listening and supporting us. Remember to follow us on all the things. Also, if you want to support us and our Patreon, you can do that at patreon.com/notoriouswomen. That's patreon .com/notoriouswomen.
Wow.
And Miriam, how else can they support the show? Oh, God.
We have done this ending so many times. She's misspelled it for the first time ever. Okay. We are on Instagram at Notorious Women Podcast. Please find us there. Like us, love us, all the things. We are back on TikTok, Notorious Women Podcast. Go to there. And you can also listen to episodes on YouTube. And if you want to email us long things, we are notoriouswmpod@gmail.com. And that is that.
Yeah. And you can also write a 5-star review. You
pretty please with a cherry on top. Thank you.
And as always, copy the link and send it to your friend. Don't just tell them about it, about this fabulous interview with Zachary Drucker. Copy the link and send it to them. All right.
You want to. Okay.
All right, guys. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.